Thanks very much, and thanks for being part of this symposium, which is great. Nicole Stefanacki is a very talented clinical neuropsych student who works in my lab at Monash. She's been particularly interested in studying attention in the context of dyslexia, and so that's what I'm going to tell you about today. In context of the very real and great real-world examples of ADHD and lived experience, my lab is pretty basic. We're interested in mechanisms of either cognition, physiological mechanisms underpinning problems such as attention and attention deficit. And much to the delight of my lab, one of the consumer groups down in Melbourne tweeted, was our work anything more than esoterically interesting? Which I think, you know, is fair cop. But what we're interested in is studying mechanisms. And so we're going to tell you about a paradigm and a method that we use to try and study the attentional problems that kids with dyslexia might have. We're following on from work that we have done in ADHD. But, of course, developmental dyslexia and ADHD are both highly comorbid conditions. Unbeknownst to some of you, perhaps, there is a prevailing view that kids with developmental dyslexia also have some attentional problems, but the nature of that is really unclear. So the primary hypothesis would be these kids have phonological processing impairments, but increasingly there's a lot of work, particularly coming out of Italy, showing that early problems with visual attention, early problems with spatial attention, can actually predate the phonological problems these kids have and will predict the later acquisition of reading abilities. So what we wanted to do with Nicole, because she was interested in dyslexia, was to build on work we'd already done in attention and in ADHD. And in particular, we were using a paradigm that we developed with colleagues of mine in Ireland that allows us to gain a handle on the information processing stages that underlie making a decision. For those of you who may not be aware, electrophysiology is measured from the scalp using human EEG. EEG is an absolutely wonderful tool if you're wanting to understand events that occur close in time. It's much better, for example, than something like functional imaging. It also has the benefit of having exquisite retest reliability, so you can use it time and time again, and it gives you very faithful results. So this might be a touch hard to see, but this task we give the kids is very simple. We use it in adults as well, and it's a task that's also used in a lot of animal models of attention and decision making as well, and it's a random dot motion task. So the child sits in front of a screen, and they're confronted with moving dots in both hemifield, and then occasionally one of those patterns will become coherent. And the difficulty of that, you can manipulate, you can move them in one hemifield, you can move them in the other, you can move them up, you can move them down. You can do a whole range of things. And then using fairly cutting-edge electrophysiological analysis, we can start to discern the individual stages that contribute to the act of making this perceptual decision. So we can focus on early attentional signatures, for example, recording alpha over posterior sites. We can look at attentional orienting to the actual stimulus onset. And importantly, we can discern this component, which for today's little talk is important, which is a signal looking at the rate at which these kids can accumulate the sensory information that tells them that this is actually a target. And then after that perceptual decision is made, you can see this potential drops off rapidly. It reaches a threshold, a bound, and then terminates. And then after that, you get a motor potential relating to the actual act of pressing the button. So within this one very simple task, you can pull out these quite subtle EEG markers, and that is useful for trying to compare and contrast different conditions. So we've done this with ADHD as well. This is some data from a little while ago, but again, we showed the exact same task where they got dots in one of the other hemifields. One of the interesting things that we've discovered working with ADHD over the years is that they often have a subtle bias in processing visual stimuli. They can often be worse in processing things on the in the left hemifield of space. And this fits with the prevailing view that the right hemisphere attentional systems of these kids might be not working equivalently. And when we look at the EEG for these kids, what you can see is that the early attentional components actually are working differently to control kids. Here's the behaviour, so The control kids are faster on the left, as depicted here. ADHD kids are actually slower on the left and biased more to the right. And then you can pull out EEG components relating to that. What we wanted to do in this study with Nicole was see if that held true with dyslexia as well, because there is also a right hemisphere hypothesis of dyslexia, and in particular of the reading and attention problems in those kids. So Nicole arduously went about the job of trying to recruit a cohort of kids who had developmental dyslexia, and in particular here we screened them so they didn't have ADHD. We wanted to actually know what the attentional problems were when the kids didn't have ADHD. There's a couple of designs you can do in these sorts of studies. You either typically recruit an age match control group and compare them to kids who have developmental dyslexia, or you can also recruit a reading level match. Now, this is important because if you compare kids with dyslexia to age match kids, they differ on a whole range of factors relating to experience, because kids with dyslexia will read less, so their very act of reading less can also affect attentional networks and attentional systems. So Nicole arduously went about the task of recruiting a group of reading level match kids, which necessarily meant they were younger. And to do this, she had to screen many hundreds of kids to get equivalently matched groups. So the developmental dyslexia group were very rigorously screened. There was 32 of those. And then we had a chronological age match group and a reading match age group. And just to get these numbers here, I will admit, relatively small, she had to screen about 200 kids. So what did we find for the kids with dyslexia? I think we found something that's very interesting. What we saw was we didn't see that apparent asymmetry when they were processing these targets in the same way as the kids with ADHD that we'd seen, but we did see that they were overall slower to detect these targets. And when we looked at the EEG underlying this, we saw that the pattern of results was pretty intact in terms of the attention, so a distinction with the ADHD that we'd seen before. But we saw this evidence accumulation signal that relates to how quickly or how efficiently they accumulate the perceptual information to underlie the decision. What we saw was the onset of this component called a CPP, centroparietal positivity, that started earlier, increased more rapidly, but then peaked at a much lower amplitude than we expected it would. Usually with kids who have slower responses, you often see amplitudes of these components that are actually higher. So this was an interesting pattern of results. When we drilled down to their reading profiles, we saw that actually whether they had lexical mixed form or a sublexical type of dyslexia actually impacted the results quite profoundly. And you can see here that kids with the lexical form of dyslexia actually have this EEG signature in a much more pronounced way. So they have a steeper slope. They saturate out at a lower amplitude much quicker. So what does all this mean? It tells us that attention in these kids is not particularly problematic, but they do definitely have inefficient evidence accumulation that may relate to the way they perform tasks and slowed perceptual decision making. And this seems to be particularly prominent in kids who have lexical form of dyslexia. So the next step for us is to actually pit a group of kids with ADHD and dyslexia symptoms against these other groups as well, to try and understand if we can identify neural markers that may aid differential diagnosis, of course, in these conditions. And there's a very interesting hypothesis, which is highly speculative, that this peaking of the amplitude at a lower threshold might indicate that there's the operation of increased neural noise in these kids, which is just random firing activity that doesn't coalesce or synchronise in any meaningful way. And this is leading the kids to have very inefficient perceptual processing. So that is it. Sorry, slightly over, Dave.